Housing for the Aged Action Group, HAG for short, a housing group for older people run by old people. Present
Raise the Roof!
We advocate for secure, affordable and appropriate housing. So listen up on the second and fourth Wednesday of the month at 5:30pm on 3CR 855 on your AM dial.
Hello and welcome to Raise the Roof. You're listening to 3CR. This is the radio show brought to you by Housing for the Aged Action Group. You're here with Liz and Fiona. How are you, Fiona?
I'm really well, thanks, Liz.
That's good. So we have got an interview that we're just about to play with Margarita Windich, who has been doing research about older women's experience of heat waves. And being the beginning of the year and the hot summer, last fortnight we interviewed some workers from HAG who work in the regional areas who have been working with clients experiencing the fires. And this week we'll be speaking to Margarita about older women's experiences with heat waves in their housing. So we'll go to that interview right now.
We're joined in the studio today by Margarita Windich, who is a researcher from RMIT. How are you going today?
I'm good.
That's
thanks.
Great. Now, listeners, long-term listeners might remember that we had Margarita in once before in way back in 2019 when you were first undertaking some research into older women and heat waves, and you're now very close to being able to release the findings of that research. So would you be able to begin by telling us a little bit about what the research was about, and then perhaps you can go into some of the findings?
Sure. So I work at RMIT. I'm a lecturer and field education coordinator in the Department of Social Work and Human Services, and I'm also a qualified social worker. I started my PhD research in 2019, and the theme of the research is heat waves, urban heat waves, and gendered social vulnerability, with a focus on older women who live alone in Melbourne. And also the use of public cool places. And it sounds all quite niche, maybe, or actually it did sound quite niche in 2019.
Yeah.
I need to qualify that. And people used to say to me, oh, that's interesting. And that was kind of it. And over the years, as the climate crisis started to deepen and climate breakdown events were happening more regularly, people are going, oh, wow, that's really, really important research.
Yeah.
And I think that tells us a little bit to where we are at the moment, I think.
Yeah. I mean, casting my mind back to the end of 2019 when we last had you on, that was prior to the terrible fires of 2019-2020. And we have had a lot more awareness of the impact of things like bushfires, but also the impact of heat waves. Sweltering cities didn't exist 5 or 6 years ago. We had fewer minimum standards for rental properties. But you're obviously ahead of your time in looking at this, and HAG is particularly interested in the intersection between heat waves, housing, and older women and older people in general. What did you find how did you go about your research, and what did you find?
Look, I think I'll just want to step back a little bit. My own inspiration to do this heat wave was actually my own experience as a renter.
Yeah? Right.
In a house that was not properly insulated, with a property owner who was not interested at all to make the house appropriate, you know, for winter and summer. And I thought, if I feel like this as a middle-aged woman who's pretty healthy and fit, and I really suffered through a couple of heat waves, what is it like for people who don't have that privilege? Even I thought I had a privilege. I had a house. I could go to work and I could go into air-conditioned space.
Mm.
And I was thinking, what about people where that's not the case? And that sort of got me really interested into that particular research around heat waves and older people, because we started hearing, you know, announcements that, you know, heat waves are particularly bad for certain population groups. So that inspired me to look into it a bit more. And what kind of transpired for me to start actually doing more of, you know, familiarizing myself with the literature was actually a disproportionate effect of heat wave mortality on older people. That's the first important thing I think to notice. And then as I started to look deeper, it became also clear that women, especially older women, within that group already were even further disadvantaged. And the jury's still out to some extent of what the reasons are, but I think we are also seeing a lot more detailed, specific, qualitative research that gives us more indication of why it is that older women are overall more impacted and, you know, make a higher group of victims of heatwave mortality and morbidity than older men. Now, that's not exclusive, but overall. And these factors are not just that older women live longer, because that was the early assumption. And I think what some of those assumptions tell us a little bit too is the kind of sexism also permeating a lot of research, you know, like in a lot of fields, including, I think, in this field. But actually that older women are also poorer than older men. And poverty is a key factor of how you will actually manage to survive a heat wave. And the other key element is that more older women live alone than older men. And we don't quite know why. And I think that'll be interesting too. And social isolation is another, you know, very, very negative factor that creates vulnerability to heat waves. So that kind of was quite interesting, I think. And I interviewed 20 women in Melbourne. They're qualitative interviews because we have already numbers, yeah? Numbers are important to some extent, but it's the stories. We want to, you know, we want to understand what is it like for a person? What do they feel? What are the impact? What are the consequences of their experience with heat waves? So I did these qualitative interviews of 20 women from right across Melbourne. They all lived alone. And the majority were on a pension, like 99% lived on an aged care pension, which we know is generally not sufficient to have good quality of life. You can survive, but you have to do a lot of, you know, budgeting to get through. And a lot of them were renters, and quite a big percentage of the renters were living in public housing too. And then coming out of that research, it does show too that the kind of, you know, where you lived had a big impact in how you were able to manage a heat wave. So I think there were some really, really interesting factors for me. And the way I kind of tried to look at it, I actually used the kind of materialist, eco-feminist sort of perspective, and that sounds all very complicated, but basically what I tried to do is actually put the context of women experiences heat waves in the context of a system that kind of Nancy Fraser calls cannibal capitalism, you know, that we live and that world kind of ecology of power that kind of divorces its own resources, you know. It just gobbles up, you know, resources of the environment. It destroys human capacity and caring capacity, and it destroys the sort of democratic kind of institutions that hold societies together. So that framework put it also in the context of the discrimination or the disadvantage that women are experiencing, because women are exploited and their whole reproductive labor is for free, and capitalism in a way makes a lot of profit out of women, you know, their work being just, you know, expropriated, and of course nature being completely exploited and expropriated, and the costs are then externalized. So that was a really, I think, important framework to look at, you know. And the way sort of the way I tried to kind of tell my story is, like I say, this is research, it's like a hot story in three acts, yeah. Which is number one, heat as a full-on disruptor of daily life, the impact it has on women. The second one I call kind of the second act is the protection. What does it take for you to be able to get through a heat wave without ending up maybe in hospital or even dying? And then the third one I kind of called survival, or what's the care that matters? What is it that you need, and who's there with you to support you to survive?
Yeah, and so for some of the individual people that you interviewed, what were some of their situations that they were in? Can you tell us a bit about some of their housing conditions, and what did you tell us about the individuals?
Yeah, look, I have a particular, like one of the particular stories that was really very impactful for me, and she was actually the first person I interviewed. She lived, you know, alone in her own flat. She was an owner-occupier. Mid-80s, she said, I'm in my golden years, which was really lovely, but she didn't tell me more than that. Mid-80s, lived by herself, very, very small budget, yeah, an aged care pension. And she told me this story. She had no air conditioning. She had a tree in the past that was providing her shade for her bedroom that was cut down without any kind of conversations. And she said it was a few days, was really, really hot, and she was lying on her bed and she could not breathe anymore. And she said, I left my house. It was 11:30 at night. And I went to the train station, which wasn't far away, to sit there a little bit out, you know, in the kind of warm air. But the warm air was less hot than her flat. Mm. And the PSOs, or protective services officers, came up and said, lady, are you all right? And she said, I'm a bit better here than at home. And that was really quite striking for me, because I was thinking, here is a woman in her mid-80s who has to leave her home to go out and sit at the train station because that was safer than in her flat.
Mm.
That was quite phenomenal.
Yeah.
Another story was of a woman who lived in one of the high-rises, you know, for public housing for people who are 55 plus. She lived on one of the top floors and no air conditioning either. And the windows only open a little bit. There was no real airflow, no fans, like ceiling fans, they can't put them in. And those big housing towers, on the top it gets really hot and there's radiating heat and it's west-facing. Mm-hmm. And she told me the intricate steps she had to take in how she could manage to stay in her flat and not leave, which was three different fans in different directions, a sheet over here on that room. In the kitchen, she had to do this. She took about three or four showers. She tried to put some ice cubes on herself, and she was sleeping on the floor in a small little mattress in the kitchen because that was the coolest place.
It's so much management. It's a lot of labor. It's a lot of invisible labor, again, as women, invisible labor is what we seem to have to do. But very difficult, so much management.
Yeah.
Like trying to create her own microclimate.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's why that kind of the second act of protection, I kind of call it also, you know, laboring at the intersection of age, of gender and class. And the poorer the women were and the less power they had over, you know, their own kind of living conditions, the more labor they had to perform. Mm,
yeah.
And I think that brings us back again to, you know, heat waves, and we know direct outcomes now of climate change or climate breakdown, which has been fueled by, you know, a completely rapacious system, as I've outlined before. These women are the least responsible for this situation, but are the ones who basically have to do so much labor in order to survive it. So and I think that was a really big one, and there was lots of stories of the amount of labor women have to do, or they have to think ahead of changing their little social life schedules and stuff, every medical appointment, because they don't want to go outside in the heat. A lot of these women weren't driving. That's the other thing, you know. They were women from, you know, 65 to 90. And a big cohort, especially in, you know, 75 plus, don't have a driver's license. So they had to restructure so much, you know, of what they were doing. And one of the women also, like her big thing was also when two crises collide. So you have the climate crisis, yeah, with the heat waves, and with COVID-19 and the emergency measures. And she was saying too that, you know, because she couldn't even leave the house, she might have maybe wanted to go to a shopping centre, but you weren't allowed to congregate. So she said that the isolation was actually the worst factor for her. That social isolation, she said, I call it murder. They were her words, you know. And I think in a way what that shows us again too, that heat doesn't just have an impact on your physical well-being, which a lot of women talked about. You know, they felt completely exhausted. They got headaches. They felt emotionally drained. Their mental health deteriorated. Mm. They got depressed because they felt locked in, you know. So the impact on the person, the body, is very broad, so to speak. And we already know that for people living alone, they often feel isolated, especially older people. We know that's one of the biggest risk factors of dying earlier too, social isolation. So when then you have, you know, a heat wave, which is a crisis, you can say, plus then another one on top of it, it had a very big impact on a few women, and they mentioned that factor quite a lot.
Mm. A lot of the advice that we hear during heat waves is very much things that the individual should be doing. So, you know, keeping yourself cool, go to a cool spot, as you're saying, go to a shopping centre, go to a library. So with that advice sometimes being quite focused on the individual behaviours, in what ways do you think that is flawed, and how does that kind of not work?
Look, I think what I also, of course, found is that these are women with an incredible amount of experience. Then they bring their practice wisdom in. They bring, you know, some of them talked and said, air conditioners didn't even exist until I was 60. You know, nobody had them and whatever, you know. So they brought in their own practice wisdom in what do you do when you know it's getting hot. And so they had very, you know, what do you say, from their experience, you know, the clothing, they do this, they do that, like very intricate things to keep cool. But that often wasn't enough anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think what was very striking for me, because I also initially came in and thought, oh, yeah, public cool places, that's what we need. And I still believe we need them. Yeah. And I just thought, wow, this is fantastic. And, you know, for older women to access public cool places, they can be cool in a couple of different ways, like keep you cool and safe, but also hang out, connect, and do all of that. Well, my findings were actually quite different to what I thought they would be, which is always interesting too in research. So the majority of women have basically said, when I said, Have you been to a public cool place? Would you go? Or if you haven't been and if you can't stay cool, would you go? The majority were aware of that messaging, you know, that it should be like a shopping centre or a library. And they all said, the first thing is, I don't want to go if I don't have to. That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really important lesson for us also. Like, people should be able to stay safe at home.
Yeah.
And older people spend a lot of time at home. So it's about keeping them safe where they are. The second one was, how do I get there? See, this is the thing, yeah? So how are people supposed to go from their house in 38 degree heat, wait for a bus, maybe without a shelter somewhere, for 20 minutes, a bus that might not come? By the time they get maybe to a public cool place, they might be close to a heat stroke. So, and again, I think that was the interesting thing. The women are experts of their lives and their bodies, and they were mentioning that and saying, well, that could actually be way more dangerous. Yeah. And then also this idea that public cool place is where they want to be. And again, one of the women said, you know, it is, her words, it is shameful. I go to this shopping centre. You have to, the shopping centre has had a renovation. They took out a lot of the old comfortable seats. They now, seats are just very limited where you can sit. The majority now are attached to a coffee shop or something where you have to consume. And the ones that are left are in this area where people walk past. And she said, I feel shame because people know why I'm there. And it makes me feel like I'm in the way. It's uncomfortable. it's transactional. It feels really, you know, bad. I don't want to be there. And there were quite, the majority of women said that shopping centres are just wrong.
The whole expectation is that you should be paying, and therefore if you can't, you're somehow cheating. Or
correct. Libraries fared a lot better. But again, you know, a lot of libraries are not really set out to be there for a few hours, you know. You can't bring your pets, for instance. You know, there's toilet issues, all sorts of things. But basically, I think what, I mean, we didn't talk a lot. Some women brought up the question of climate change in itself too, and how, you know, with a lot of kind of expertise too, and saying they know some of the reasons, and you know that really we need to stop, you know, greenhouse gas emissions. Unless we stop them, heat waves will get worse. So you know, some women were very familiar, and they also felt that, you know, why are we supposed to bear the brunt, and we're supposed to kind of deal with it individually when this is a really bigger, broader social issue. And I think that's a really important one, and where you see also, it's like, you know, government wants to kind of, you know, handball. We open gas fields, we give subsidies to the fossil fuel companies, but you manage the fallout from that. Yeah, that's now your responsibility, and I think that's. The advice is extremely limiting in how it's actually effective. I think that's, for me, has come through very strongly, actually.
You're listening to 3CR 855 AM, Raise the Roof, Housing for the Age Action Group show, and we're joined by Margarita and Liz talking about heatwaves and older people. So what should governments be doing to ameliorate the risk of heatwaves for older people?
Well, they should stop drilling. or gift really should stop drilling, give drilling licenses. You know, fossil fuels got to stay in the ground. I think that's one of the key first things. The other things, of course, in my would be that climate, that heat waves are actually not treated the same way as other climate disasters. Yeah, a heat wave kills more people than all our climate related disasters together. Yeah, and the figures we have in Australia, you know, they're actually much higher than what they're recorded, because a lot of heatwave deaths are not recorded as heatwave deaths. Yeah, so they're a lot higher. So they need to be treated as disasters. And if you have a climatic event that's treated as a disaster, it releases Commonwealth funding. Now, heatwaves, when there's heatwaves, that releases no extra funding from the government. So councils, I don't have a problem with council managing maybe how they can support residents, because they're closer than maybe state or federal government body. That kind of makes sense. But they get no extra funding. So that's why you also see, when it comes to public cool place, that it's very haphazard. Each council does it differently. There's only limited funds to maybe, you know, extend opening hours, because you might need security guards if it's at evening, all this kind of stuff, you know. So number one, that there has to be some much more appropriate funding for cool spaces for people who do need them, and make them accessible also. Where's the transport? Like, it's this kind of stuff that I think is really important. But the other one I really want to raise too, of course, is it's housing infrastructure. I mean, that's a critical one, from public housing, how to make them actually heat proof, but also cool proof. Yeah, that's got to be a government responsibility. And then proper regulation for the real estate market. And that is also for builders, you know, to actually, the regulations need to really change, and the standards to make, to insulate homes properly. But also for renters, you know, the standards are so low, you know, it's really, really low. And that actually exposes people to serious health risks, serious health risks. And the other one, of course, on is also the urban planning. I mean, we know that some suburbs in Melbourne during a heat wave could be 10 degrees hotter than others. There's some brilliant work some of my colleagues have done at RMIT in urban planning, you know, where they've measured the urban heat a vulnerability index, and where they measured the heat island effect, and they've come up with these figures, and that tells us there's insufficient greening, there's still too much tarmac, and it's dark, you know, dark roofs, dark, you know, asphalt, all of that. So that also needs to be dealt with, because heat waves have, you know, very big impact on cities. So we need to heat-proof cities also. I think that's another really important part of that. So I think that's what governments need to do. But I also think community plays a really important role. And that's why, for me, that kind of last act of care that matters was actually quite beautiful, because that's also where the women talked about where they go, who they hang out with, who's there with them, who checks in. And, you know, some of them have developed like a phone tree. Mm. One woman was talking about a phone tree with her mates. You know, when the heat was on, they call each other, how are you doing? Are you okay? Do you need something? Yeah. And another one, they've got this little social club, and she goes, we create family here. Yeah. We look after each other. Another one then again talks about the social connection of the role of a cafe or the role of an op shop, where they hang out, get to know each other, and then they know if somebody hasn't been here for a day or so, they go, well, where's Susie? Mm. Haven't seen Bridge for a while. Maybe we need to check in, yeah? So the role of community also in that is really important. And, you know, I think it's about us rebuilding community, you know, like that importance of a neighborhood as a place of belonging, real belonging, not just the catchphrase, yeah? Mm. That care where we care for people who might only have 6 months in their life, where we actually treasure every minute of a life, yeah? And for me, what I find deeply disturbing, but it's not a surprise, is the incredible amount of ageism that exists mm-hmm. in our society. The fact that heat waves kill more people than any other disaster, but the majority of older people, I think it's directly related to that, and older women, when they're economically not viable, potentially seen as a burden and stuff. Mm-hmm. To just say we can just sacrifice, you know, these incredible, not normal people, just people, you know, and that we think it's okay for them not be able to live the last minute of their life, mm-hmm. you know, that we are prepared to just go, nah, doesn't matter so much. I think that is a very dangerous way of thinking in our society because it doesn't actually future-proof nothing. Because if we get that right, we get everything else right. Mm. If we get it right, the needs of the most marginalized communities, everything will flow from there.
That's right. We're just about out of time, unfortunately, Margarita. So would you be able to tell listeners where they can find out more, when your research will be published, and where they can go for more information?
Yes, sure. So once my research is published, it'll be available through the RMIT, you know, research site. But also I will, you know, I will make publications, I will announce it over social media.
Yeah.
I'll do all of that. I'll write articles.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your research and for taking the time to come in and speak to us today. It's been really great to have you on.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Bye.
We know you love listening to 3CR, but we also know that many of you haven't downloaded the Community Radio Plus app yet.
The app lets you tune in anywhere and share the station with your friends.
So, show the love and share the love and search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
And that's unfortunately all we have time for today. We are going to go out with a song by an American artist called Cassie Blanton. There's a bit of a language warning on this one, and it's called Elon Musk.
Elon Musk is a fuck of a man, just look at his rich kid face. Well, I'd like to make his dream come true and shoot him into outer space. Wasn't it Vladimir Lenin who said there ain't no competition? Once rich buy up all the capital, they buy the law and the politicians.
He's not an inventor, he's an investor. And if you don't lance them, they start to fester. So if you're running around in a panic and you're wondering who you can trust, well, it's socialism or barbarism, it's people or Elon Musk.
Elon Musk is a husk of a man, born on an emerald mine. He's a big bootlegging grifter with a meal.
rock and roll.